prosecution outlined how accounting practices
of Conley did not. What kind of likeness is that?
If they were great artists, they'll be in a museum.
I'm fucking fodder for cartoonists now.
Hello, and welcome back to Gutter Boys. Gutter Boys is a small press comics podcast about the highs, the lows, and the ins and the outs of making comics. I am Cam Del Rosario. Not with me today is my co-host, JB Rowe. I hope that I did my man justice by getting our little catchphrase right. Still felt a little wrong rolling off the tongue, but whatever. A valiant effort on my end. That said, just me today, short intro, kind of a short episode. JB wasn't on this one either. He's been in day job hell, which I think we can all relate to, but I promise you that the gutter train will be a rolling back at full strength soon. I know that I took a couple episodes off and now JB's been off, but we will have more information, I promise, on my entire career, which isn't much, but I promise on my career that we will have information about the Columbus show for the next main feed episode. That said, I did have a great conversation on this episode with Natalie Norris. Natalie just put out a book called Dear Minnie, Part 1 from Fantagraphics, and you can currently get that wherever finer books are sold. Definitely support your local comic shop first if you can. But it is a good interview. And before we get there, as always, if you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/gutterboys or gutterboys.top will direct you there as well. Tons of bonus episodes in the vault. I just recorded one with Ramon where we discussed Barbie and Oppenheimer and why Mex Flintayo is truly dead. So if you want to go ahead and subscribe to our Patreon to support us, it's much appreciated. And definitely thanks, as always, for tuning into the show. And I look forward to being at full strength with JB by my side for our next episode. And in the meantime, stick around for Natalie Norris at the end of the break.
We'll be right back.
Hank the Artist is a new comic by Fennell and is set on Dust, a prison planet, and it follows Hank, a felon-turned-bandit who escapes the raiding group he was forced to join. Exploring the struggle to make art in a world that doesn't care, Hank blasts through an unforgiving landscape driven by the only thing he wants, to watch the sunset behind the waves and to draw peacefully in a sketchbook. Printed on matte pages with a soft-touch laminate cover, this print run is limited to 100 hand-numbered copies and comes with a watercolor sketch featuring a character or a moment on Dust. Hank the Artist is exclusively available to order from Wigshop Webshop, and you can secure a copy over at www.wigshopwebshop.com.
And now, a few words from our sponsors, the Santo Sisters.
Solo son chicas normales, pero cuando los problemas aparecen, son superheroínas muy sensuales. Santos, las hermanas Santos, como ellas no hay tantos, dispuestos a luchar. Santos, las hermanas Santos, como ellas no hay tantos, dispuestos a luchar.
Meow. Meow. Sid the Cat magazine is out now. If you've ever been to an amazing rock and roll show and thought, I wish I could experience this moment again, but in comic form, then Sid the Cat magazine is for you.
Fiercely independent show promoter Sid the Cat have joined forces with comics journalist Andrew Greenstone to bring you an ongoing publication that documents the SoCal indie rock scene. This stunning 52-page full-color magazine features comics, articles, photos, and illustrations from a rotating cast of local illustrators and writers. It's a celebration of Sid's artists and venues and supports those keeping the bleeding edge of the indie music scene alive. Our first issue covers musical artists Big Thief, Illuminati Hotties, Mike Kroll, Fucked Up, Finn Lilly, Katie Kirby, Kate LeBon, Cursive, Christian Lee Hudson, No Win, and so many more. If you are a fan of comics, indie music, zines, rock reports, or community by the way of culture, order a copy now at sidthecat.com/sid-zine. Again, that's sidthecat.com/sid-zine.
Athenium Comic Art is an original art website for some of the best cartoonists in the business. They currently represent Remy Boydell, Marie Capelle France, Nicole Gu, Jonathan Hill, Emma Hunsinger, Casey Nowak, Micah Song, and Tilly Walden. Athenium Comic Art gives fans the opportunity to own an original piece of art from their favorite comics and support the artists that they love. In their short time in business, they've already shipped many iconic pages out to hardcore fans across the globe. Don't miss out on your chance to own a one-of-a-kind piece of history. Check out their website, AtheniumComicArt.com, and type in Gutter Gang at checkout to receive free shipping on your first order. Again, the website is AtheniumComicArt.com, and the code is Gutter Gang.
Morning, Gary.
Morning, Marianne.
Need a menu?
Nah, I'll just have the usual.
You sure do love your eggs and coffee, Gary.
Best way to start your morning, Marianne. Well, that and an issue of Town and County.
What's that?
Town and County is a new comic series written and drawn by cartoonist Alex Nall. He's that guy that wrote them books about teaching and that Mr. Rogers feller.
Oh, he was such a nice man.
The first issue is 36 pages of black and white comic stories with beautiful color covers and features six stories about folks in our little township here in Illinois, like Susie Barber, the house cleaner that uncovers her client's dirty laundry, if you know what I mean, and Stanley Pepper, that big feller that just lost his job and took to drinking every night at Bugs's Tavern.
Well, ain't that something?
Town and County is published by Ivy Terrace Press, headquartered in Chicago.
Chicago? Who would want to live there? So dirty.
Each issue comes with a copy of The Hometown Hero, our little town's newsletter, and it's only
$8. $8? Where can I get it, Gary?
You can order a copy of Town and County on the internet at StoreEnvy/AlexNallComics.
Well, there's your breakfast, Gary.
Thanks, Marianne.
Ah, nothing like a cup of coffee and a good comic book.
Rust Belt Review is a quarterly comics lit magazine featuring serialized and short-form comics from some of the most exciting cartoonists in the small press scene today. Volume 1 features work from Gutter alums M.S. Harkness, Audra Stang, and Caleb Arecchio, along with work by Andrew Greenstone, Sean Knickerbocker, and Juan Jose Fernandez. You can order your copy of Rust Belt Review today by going to rustbeltreview.org. Enter in promo code GUTTER to receive $2 off your order. Again, that website is rustbeltreview.org, promo code GUTTER.
The Last Aviatrix is a post-nuclear adventure comic by independent Los Angeles-based cartoonist Buster Cagle. The story follows Summer, our last aviatrix, who pilots the sole surviving airplane, a nuclear-powered B-29. As she travels the ruined world finding ways to survive and help humanity while dealing with the imminent threat of the Atomborn, a rare breed of atomic wizards that want to see her out of the sky, her mission becomes complicated when she accidentally picks up Henry, an Atomborn child who wields incredible power, and Clementine, a berserker on a quest for vengeance. Can our aviatrix survive this ruined and irradiated wasteland? Every issue can be read for free on bustercagle.com/comics. Paper copies can be ordered as well, but, you know, you can still read it for free. If you like wizards or warplanes, go check it out.
Now, back to our program.
Thank you.
welcome back from the break. Today, we are joined with Vermont-based cartoonist Natalie Norris. Natalie just released a book with Fantagraphics called Dear Minnie, book one of two, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yep, there's a second one.
All right, awesome. Well, I'm very happy to have Natalie here with us today, and we're going to get into the normal stuff that we get into on the show. But before we get there, everything going okay recently? How's the book going, the promotion and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, first off, thanks for having me on the show.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a crazy summer. This being my first book, and so I feel like I'm still sort of taking everything in as it happens. But yeah, it's been good so far.
Now, were you doing any of the shows over the summer? Did you do TCAF or, you know, any of the little festivals or anything like that?
Yeah, I did TCAF, which was a couple months before the book came out. So we had a few copies to sell there, which was fun to do sort of like a test launch.
For sure. Now, were you just tabling there with Fantagraphics or did you actually table there yourself?
I had my own table. Yeah. Okay. And then did some signings.
How was that, your own table? Like, was that your first TCAF or had you done it before?
It was my first TCAF, but I've done SPX a number of times and MICE. So I was familiar with like tabling and everything. But
for sure.
Yeah, it was fun to be up in Toronto.
Now, you mentioned, you know, you're located in Vermont and then the two shows you just mentioned with SPX and MICE, those are like, you know, Northeast shows. Are you from that area or is that just where you're located now?
Sort of. So I moved around a number of times growing up and eventually we settled in Rhode Island. And then I've also spent time in New Hampshire where my family is based right now. So yeah, I'm like pretty familiar with the East Coast, also the Midwest. And I lived in Arizona and Texas. So I've been all over.
Hell yeah. Now I'll kind of go in like weird timeline here, but I did see that you graduated from the Center for Cartoon Studies. And if I'm not mistaken, that is in Vermont, right? And like White River Junction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is that why you're still in Vermont? Like, because you graduated and you just kind of hung around like the area, or how did you, you know, make your journey to, you know, CCS and deciding, hey, this is what I want to do. I'm going to go all in on comics and actually pursue formal education.
Yeah, so I am still around White River Junction because of CCS. I work at the library, which has been a really great gig. I came to CCS in, I guess it was 2018. I came to comics kind of late. I didn't realize that that's what I wanted to do until after college. And then once I realized that, I was really sort of anxious to get the ball rolling, which is why I was looking into like what kind of schooling there was. And so I did one of their summer workshops and was so sort of like taken with the whole small town Vermont thing. And also the timing just felt right for me to be able to relocate for grad school. So I ended up, that's when I came up from Texas to Vermont. And then I've been there. Yeah, ever since.
So you mentioned working at the library and, you know, the only like comics library I've had the pleasure of visiting was the Billy Ireland. You know, they've got a little library type deal on. So I know this isn't necessarily about you, but that is kind of interesting, I guess, to me and also possibly in our audience. Like working at a library like that, is it all comics with CCS?
Yeah. So it's like probably 90% comics. We have we have a selection of like reference books, artist reference books, design reference, and then some instructional reference. But yeah, like the bulk of the collection, it's all graphic novels, comics, zines. We have a lot of mini comics and small press, which is really awesome.
Now, I don't know if I'm getting like too inside, and if I am, you know, feel free to shut it down. But do you all like have a budget? Do people send you the comics because they want it there? Like, how does the curation go about getting comics into the CCS library?
Oh, yeah. So we do have a monthly budget and then we get a ton of donations. So, yeah, if anyone has like mini comics that you want to send us, we're always excited to get more of those.
Hell yeah. Now, going back into, you know, your path here, you said that you actually, you know, went to college before actually going back to school for comics. Did you go to school for something art related when you actually went to like, I don't want to say real college, but, you know, a university or whatever it was? Yeah.
Yeah, so I went to a small liberal arts school in Ohio, Kenyon College, and I was a studio art major there. So yeah, like focused on art. I also did a lot of writing classes. I think what was funny is after doing the whole like studio art, liberal arts thing, I sort of made a pact with myself that I wouldn't do any more like art school unless I was learning a distinct skill. Because I think like when you're just in a studio space and getting critique around more like conceptual ideas, like I didn't find a ton of, I guess, meaning in that. And so mm-hmm. I wanted to only go back to school if I was going to learn something that was like a tangible skill, which is why I was excited about comics, because there was so much that I had no idea, you know, like how do you turn essentially a painting or a drawing into a digital file and then into a book? Like all of that was sort of felt like magic to me. So yeah, it was fun to dive into something that was more like technical mm-hmm. in terms of the schooling.
Now that you've like kind of done the whole like school, you know, in both, you know, I don't want to say regular art, but, you know, like with the focus in like art and then also a more specialized focus later on, what is your like overall like opinion on education? And there's no right or wrong answer. You know, we have different answers whenever we ask different cartoonists this. Some people are, hey, you got to go to school. Some people are like, no. So what do you feel like now that you've kind of run the gamut of education in all of this? Do you feel like it was invaluable and worth it? You know, if you had to give any advice regarding higher education, what would that be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it definitely, these are all things that you can learn on your own. I think that it just would take like a lot more time and self-directed research and whatnot. So I think that finding schooling that provides you with more of the technical training, things that like, there was so much insider information I feel like I got from grad school. And I think that's what was sort of missing for me in undergrad, is I felt like I wasn't learning like specific things. It was just this like amorphous like studio practice. So I think like when I learned printmaking, when I learned comics, animation, like those were things where I felt like, yeah, it really does help to have school or at least like be able to take workshops and learn from teachers and such.
For sure. Now, you said that you kind of got to comics late. And I mean, there's no like real time to get into it, in my opinion. But how did that happen? Was there always like, did you grow up reading any kind of comics? Did you get exposed to comic books late? What is your relationship with comics? And, you know, how did it get to where it is today?
Yeah. So like as a kid, I only had exposure to like a few comics. Like I found the Tintin in the school library and thought that was really cool. Because I was really into drawing, but I had no idea that there was like this whole world of comics and graphic novels. And then I think when I was like in middle school, my dad got me some graphic novels. Like he got me Black Hole by Charles Burns.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I was like, whoa.
Was he like reading that kind of stuff, or was he just like, oh, this looks cool. Maybe, you know, my kid will like it.
It was actually, he had a coworker who was really into like indie comics. So she would just give him these recommendations. Yeah, which is fun because then I got to read some interesting stuff.
For sure.
But at the time, I was so kind of put off by the idea of having to draw something over and over again. So even though I loved to draw, I was hesitant to get into comics because, you know, you're drawing these tiny panels and over and over again. So yeah, I think that's why I went more the fine art route, like focusing on single paintings and single drawings. But what eventually brought me back around to comics is that I realized that I really wanted to tell memoir stories. And I'd done a lot of like writing workshops in undergrad and then also had been doing some writing workshops with a teacher in Tucson. And I was like into the memoir part, you know, it's like, I knew like, okay, I have stories that I want to tell, but the idea of like the end result being a prose book felt really uninspiring. And also just the idea of like having to sit at your laptop and type away for, you know, hours a day.
Sure.
So yeah, it's like, I wanted to find a way to like bring art back into the storytelling. And then it was sort of like one of those like aha moments, like, oh duh, there's a whole medium that literally does just that.
For sure. Now, what is the timeline on this? Like, when are you putting this together?
That was after college. So it was like, okay. I think a couple years out, or maybe just a year out from undergrad.
Okay. Gotcha. So, you mentioned, you know, hosting writing workshops and, you know, leading those and whatnot. Were you doing like, you know, regular prose writing a lot? Did you put anything out, you know, a book or any kind of collection or anything like that before comics?
No, I didn't put anything out. And I think that was like one of the signs like that I sort of noticed for myself was that I just didn't have much of a drive to put mm-hmm. out writing. It just didn't feel like it was fully the way that I wanted to express myself, I guess.
Gotcha. So you go to school and do you have a goal? Like, are you just like, I'm just going to come in here and, you know, take it? Because you mentioned, you know, the invaluable resources you had and how you got to experience, like, you know, the individual processes. And you felt that that was a very valuable experience to you, which, you know, I would agree with. Did you have any like goals? Were you just like, I'm going to try this for a little bit or I'm going to do it no matter what? Like making that decision to make that jump into getting a formal comics education.
Yeah, it's funny. I really felt very sure. It's like mm-hmm. I literally had an epiphany late at night and it just like clicked. And I was like, I have to make a graphic memoir. And this was like before I'd drawn a single page of comics. Like I knew nothing yeah. about the medium, but I just something inside me was like, this is what you need to do. And then from that point on, I was just very committed to figuring out, okay, now that I know what I want to do, like, how do I do it?
Gotcha. So this comic, you know, that you just put out with Fantagraphics, you know, Dear Minnie, this is the comic that I'm assuming you wanted to make. I'm sure it went through, and we'll get into that. I'm sure it went through, you know, different processes, but this is what you sought out to make, I'm assuming, when you said the graphic memoir. Or did you have something else in mind first?
Sort of. It's like I knew that I wanted to do a memoir. I wasn't sure, like, what the story would focus on, because mm-hmm. I think there were like a number of sort of storylines from my adolescence that felt like things I needed to unpack. And so, yeah, I didn't come to CCS knowing that I was going to make this book. That was something that like unfolded over time.
Okay.
But I knew that I needed to do some kind of memoir.
Now, did you look at any kind of autobio stuff, like gearing up to make your own stuff? Like, was there anything or any authors or, you know, cartoonists specifically that you were, you know, trying to lock into? Because autobio, I feel like, is, you know, it's been in the history of comics since the beginning, you know. Is there anything that you look at for inspiration, or did you just kind of try to avoid all that? Because when I'm working, I try to avoid comics, but everybody's kind of different.
Right. Yeah. I mean, before, I think like Diary of a Teenage Girl was definitely something that planted the seed in terms of like combining words and pictures to tell a story about adolescence. Mm-hmm. But when I was doing like actually drawing the book, I think I definitely stepped back from reading comics. Yeah, I mean, I've read a ton of comics like my first year at CCS and then working in the library. But when I was actually like doing the final art for the book, I think, yeah, it's like you do want to focus more on like what you're doing and not be inundated with like other people's way of using the medium.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you just kind of teed it up. You said working on the book. So what was the process like for working on this? Did you start working on it while you were actively taking classes at CCS?
Yeah. So I came up with the idea during thesis year, which is like pretty self-directed, at least once it gets like further into the year. And once again, it was like, I feel like I always have these late night epiphanies and then it's just like, okay, this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so that is how the story came to me. The idea of telling a story in the form of a letter to my friend Minnie. And then once I had that idea, it's like I was sort of mulling around like how to get into it. And it sort of happened by accident, like in terms of the way that I decided to tell the story with the page layouts being very like organic, like no panel borders and such.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's a definitely like a different kind of setup. You didn't really follow the contemporary like comics mold, which is, I think, what makes the book stand out. And there's also like the intertwining narratives where you get like the letter, but then you also get like the what's actually happening in the story.
Right.
So your approach to it, sorry, I cut you off there, but yeah, your approach was definitely different with the book. And I think it was refreshing, honestly. But yeah, sorry, continue.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it's like funny because I think like I learned so much about how to make like traditional comics and use the conventions of the medium and whatnot. But then when it actually came to like working on my bigger story, I think I sort of went back to maybe how I was doing art like before comics, like when I would just be working in my sketchbook, like as a teenager. And then the way that I wrote the book was, like I was saying, it was almost like an accident in terms of I was just like taking notes, like, okay, how do I want to do this? What do I want to put in the story? What are the themes or whatever? And I started adding some sketches and then writing next to it. And then pretty soon I was like, oh, that's, I think this is just the page. Like, I think this is just what it'll look like. And then once I gave myself permission to just go for it, it's like all of the memories like just poured out. And I also didn't work chronologically. So I would sometimes just draw like one page and then jump to a totally different point in time and draw another page and then kind of move back and forth. And I think doing that allowed me to keep up like momentum and not get sort of like bogged down by the emotions. It's like I could just like keep moving and jumping around.
Sure. And you know, you mentioned bogged down by the emotions. The subject matter of the book gets heavy at times. You know, it's funny sometimes, but
yeah,
you know, it deals with some very heavy themes. Is it, you know, I've never done personal work to that degree and, you know, told a story like that about myself. I don't even have a story like that for me to tell, but mm-hmm. Is it hard for you, you know, as a writer, as a cartoonist, but also as an individual with this being such intense subject matter at times, like, and you mentioned, you know, dealing with the emotions, like, what is that process like, you know, like having, is it therapeutic in a way because you're working it out on the page? Like, does it fuck you up sometimes, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it 100% fucks you up, mm-hmm. But I think it's like, it's sort of cyclical or like comes in waves. And I think, I mean, every stage of the process was different, and drawing the book, I think, was probably, it was ultimately cathartic, I think, even though it was really difficult at times. I think what's been weird is like now that it's out in the world, I feel like that is its whole other emotional experience that I honestly like haven't really even wrapped my head around. So yeah, it's like it can be hard to explain even like what this whole process has felt like. And yeah, I think like a lot of people want to tell these kinds of stories, and I definitely like, I recently taught a workshop for CCS that like focused on telling stories about like trauma and adversity and whatnot. And I think like in a lot of ways I did not follow my own advice for, you know, how to do this in maybe a more like gentle way. Like, I think because I decided I was going to do this and then just sort of was like, whatever the emotional cost, I'm going to keep going. And that's definitely not advice that I give to other people.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, it's just, it's been kind of a wild ride. I think I'm still figuring it out.
Understandably. So, you did mention, you know, jumping around. So as far as like putting it together, do you like thumbnail out a whole story? Do you like write out a script, you know, putting it all together? Or do you kind of just work on the fly and you know where you're going in your head and you know that this is going to be a scene and just do it in chunks like that? Like, what's your approach to actually like, I guess, like pre-planning to execution?
Yeah. So I did sort of like, I guess what you call maybe a first draft, where mm-hmm. it's I was working close to size and just going straight to ink.
What size are you working at, by the way?
The end size was 9x12. And okay. Then I think I was in like a 8x10 sketchbook for the draft. So yeah, I would just like draw the pages in ink. And I was also very much like, there was no whiteout. There was no sort of like, obviously you can't erase ink, but it was sort of committing to whatever comes down, like that's what it is. And obviously a few things got changed when I then like translated that into the final art. But yeah, it was all, there was no like scripting or thumbnails or anything. Yeah.
So was that just in the sketchbook version or even to the final version? Like you were just kind of on that stream of consciousness, you know, just let it all out like once and then move on. Like, was that how you did the final book as well? Or was that just the pre-planned book, like the, I guess, the rough version?
Yeah, I mean, I tweaked a few things with the final art, but for the most part, yeah, it's like I try and avoid redrawing things. Like even my pencils, I try not to have to erase and redraw. So things do pretty much like end up the way that I put them down. And I think like, because I was working without panel borders, like you can kind of shape the page around whatever comes out and you in a way like don't have to plan as much as when you're trying to fit things into boxes.
Now, do you feel like that's just how you're working on this book? Do you, or is this like something, is this how you just approach all comics?
Yeah, I think that we'll have to see. Uh-huh. Obviously I have to do the second book, so like that's going to be the same format. And I do think I like working without panels and whatnot. But then it's also fun, like a lot of my earlier comics were with panels, and I think that there's different challenges and like different things that you can accomplish with both.
For sure. So the reason why, you know, I was asking like, if that was your approach, because like that kind of just threw me for a loop, because like the book seems like so narrative driven. The fact that you were just doing it at a page at a time, like not scripting it or anything, because it flows really well. So like, you know, it was just kind of, it seemed very thought out. If anything, at least written, you know, pre-written and everything. Yeah. So that's why I was like, oh, do you, you know, is this just like kind of like an experiment, or are you going to continue working that way? So you are working on, are you working on book two now, or is book two done?
No. Oh my God. Book two is not done. Okay. Because it took me 2 years to do the final art for this book. And I finished that in like December. So yeah, book two, that will come when it comes.
And it does have like a tentative release date, or is it a locked in release date? I saw 2025 floating around online, I think.
Yeah, that's very tentative.
Okay, cool, cool.
Yeah.
So how long from like, you know, like first page to last page? I know it took you till December, but what amount of time did it take you to do like the whole first part?
Yeah, I mean, once I like really started working on the final art, like I finished the draft. So I started the draft in 2020, January. Obviously, shit went down. Then I started working on the final art in, I guess it was like September. And then it took me 2 years from that. Around, yeah, it was like 25 months.
Gotcha. Now, I know you said that you try not to correct your own work, and, you know, whatever, comes out on the page is just there. So, like, if you do mess something up, are you throwing the whole page out, or are you just accepting it?
Yeah, it depends. It's like, I didn't make any big mistakes. Like, I never, like, spilled ink all over a page or something. Yeah. I'm trying to think it's actually the first page is the one page that I redrew half of, because like the first time I drew myself as a character, I hadn't fully figured out like what the style was gonna be, so it looked really weird and just like not right. And so then by the time I finished the book, I circled around and redrew like half of that page.
I gotcha.
And then photoshopped it together. But that was really the only one that I had to redraw.
So I'm assuming the book was all like analog tools. It's all like ink and like, you know, watercolor and paints.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just, I'm assuming, scanned it, maybe some light corrections digitally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you work digitally ever, or are you always like, you know, like we call it analog on the show. I don't know if like what you would refer to it as. Our friend Ramon says he's an old school pro. That's what he refers to it as. But like, are you like pure comics making, like all physical, or do you do digital stuff as well?
It's funny. I like wish that I could do digital. Mm-hmm. I've tried. I got an iPad thinking like this will be great for commissions and stuff. And I think there's such a learning curve to figuring out how to draw on glass or on whatever like surface. So
yeah,
I definitely am much more comfortable traditionally. And like, I use like a dip pen. So it's sort of like as old school as you can get. But yeah, I would like to practice working digitally, but mm-hmm. we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Now at CCS, do they like have like digital only classes and, you know, physical material classes only, or is it kind of whatever you bring to the school, like to work on with?
Yeah, it's pretty much whatever you bring. I think there might be some assignments in the first year where you're required to do them traditionally, but mm-hmm. everything else is really whatever you're comfortable with.
Gotcha. Now, as far as, you know, linking up with Fantagraphics, did you finish the book and you pitched it to them? Were they on board before you finished and you had something to show them? How'd that all work out?
Yeah. So I reached out to Eric, I think in like October of 2020. And then, okay. or no, I think I sent it to him over the summer, like the thesis version. And then I think I heard back from him in October. And so I'd only done a handful of finished pages. So he was kind of like, this is cool, but like, I have to see more. And then I kept sending him things. And then eventually he was like, yeah, I'll publish it.
Hell yeah. Now, are you planning on doing book two there as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because cool. It was technically one book when he offered to publish it. And then I was like, actually, can we split this in half? And they were cool with that. So yeah.
Now, the actual physical object turned out great. Were you pretty hands-on on like what you wanted, or were you just like, hey, here's the book and you all do what you want?
Yeah. So I worked with the designer, Kayla E., and she was really great. I had a pretty clear vision of what I wanted. Like, I knew that I wanted it to have gold embossing foil.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Because I don't know, like that was something as a kid, like I was so obsessed with old books, and I mean, I'm still obsessed with old books and like the sort of fancy book design and everything. So I wanted it to look like that and have like a very aesthetic design. And in a way, I think I wanted that to like help counteract the more difficult subject matter, so that like when people look at the book, it's not like a triggering image on the cover or something. Like, it's sort of
for sure
calming. There's flowers.
Yeah, definitely. So as far as like making that happen, did you feel like the nuances of like not even asking like Fantagraphics in general, but like, do you feel like getting those ideas across, like, do you feel like you were able to execute that perfectly, or is there anything you wish you would have done differently? I'm really like a big design nerd with like mm-hmm. final product and everything like that. Like, are you like, was there anything that you wanted to try, or, you know, that didn't necessarily work out, or were you just like, this is it?
I don't think so. I think like, I mean, it was funny because like Fantagraphics is pretty hands off with the editorial process, like unless you really want them to give you more feedback. So with the inside of the book, I really did that all myself. And then with the outside, they had more like feedback in terms of like what they thought would make a stronger cover design. So that was kind of fun to get to practice collaborating.
For sure.
And yeah, but I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous book, definitely. So, and you know, sometimes like I feel like they'll just put out, you know, such like their books are always nice, but I feel like they always pay attention to details, and those details always come, you know, make those books look so much nicer than other comics on the shelves. And yours definitely fits that mold. But as far as you mentioned, you know, they weren't too hands-on with the editorial unless you asked. Did you ask for anything, or were you just like, here's the book, if you have any glaring, you know, things to say? Like, were you asking for that kind of feedback, or were you just wanting to kind of do your own thing?
Yeah, I just wanted to do my own thing.
Well, it was such a personal story, you know? I mean, how much can you edit on that, you know?
Right. And obviously, like, when you're so close to a story, like, you do need someone to tell you, like, if this makes sense, if anything's missing. But yeah, it's like, I think I feel for my friends who are doing memoir with publishers that do have a lot more editorial feedback, because I feel like at a certain point, like, you have to sort of decide, like, is this even memoir anymore, or like, what, like, how many things can you change to still make it feel true to how it happened?
Definitely. Well, I know you mentioned that book two is some time away. Have you done any kind of work on that, whether it's, you know, pre-production or anything like that, or are you kind of just letting book one breathe for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I have like the draft for book two. I think there's like, there's probably more that I want to go back in and change with the second half, which is why, part of why I wanted to split it in two to begin with, because I felt pretty solid about the first half. And then there's, I think the second half, it has to span a much longer period of time. So then figuring out the pacing for that. Yeah, I think there's more that I want to go in and change before I like jump into the final art.
For sure. Now, I guess, you know, it could change by the time you actually like sit down to, you know, start full production on the book. But, you know, let's say you're working on a book. What's your schedule look like? Do you try to work on comics every day? Do you set certain days aside for them? Like, oh, I'm going to only do them on the weekends. Like, what's your schedule look like? And, you know, how do you tackle making comics when you're having to be, you know, in the groove?
Yeah, it definitely fluctuates. I'm not someone who really likes strict schedules. I did a lot of the book at night, so between like 9 and like 2 a.m. I'm trying to work a little bit more in the day just to like keep my sleep schedule better.
For sure.
But yeah, it's like, it definitely fluctuates, and it like depends, you know, like what other things I have going on, like, but I work part-time and such.
Definitely. So do you find yourself having to like take a break, or are you like locked in when you like actually like start, you know, and get into the, you know, habit of making them and knowing you have to make these pages?
Yeah, I feel like it, I mean, it definitely depends on like what part of the story I'm at. Like when it's something that's a heavier subject matter, those pages, even if it's like less pages, obviously takes a lot more time. So there'll be periods where I'm not working for a while. Like I did have to take some longer breaks in the middle of doing the first book. And then I also have, I serialized it on Patreon, and I think that was helpful because it helped me like break the story into chunks and then have somewhat of a deadline to try and get the pages done by.
For sure. Now, you did bring it up. I was going to ask your Patreon. So you were publishing the story, you know, as you were working on it there. Do you feel like, you know, publishing that content in smaller chunks, do you feel like it's a disservice to the whole story, or do you make the work and upload it to where it's like, hey, this is all like one part, and it's like, you know, a narrative that kind of not necessarily is a beginning and an end, but like works as a post online separate from the final product, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I would say I definitely thought of it only as like, this is part of the full story, because I think like there aren't real chapter breaks in right. the story. So sometimes I was called, like I'd call them chapters, and then it might end in like a weird spot or like in the middle of a scene, because the scene was just too long to do in 1 month. Yeah, so I think I wasn't thinking of them as like standalone posts.
For sure. Yeah, because like a lot of times, especially now, like that line gets blurred where you look on Instagram and everybody's uploading their stuff for the swipe and it'll still be formatted, you know, to the page, you know, when it becomes a printed thing. But some of the stuff can read on its own as like one post, but it also has context, you know, in the grand scheme of things with the book. But with your book, I didn't know if you were like breaking it up like, hey, here's a chunk that would make sense if you read this now or if you were just uploading it as you were doing it. And how you were serializing that. Because I think it's an interesting approach because there's really no right or wrong way to do it. And everything's online now.
Totally.
Yeah. So, and I mean, it's kind of, you know, I personally don't like it just because I'm like, oh, give me a paper comic all day. But I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. And I think like I was really wary about putting too much on Instagram. Like, I think for me, the line had to be drawn with like Patreon, because at least there, like, it feels more like, you know, Tumblr did, or like a blog or a webcomic, where you go there because you're interested in the whole project. You're not just like scrolling and this is popping up in between, you know, someone else's food pics or something.
Right. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Cause I think, yeah, it's like given the subject matter. And also, like, I wanted to know at that point when I was reading it, like when I was making it, who was reading it. And so like knowing who had access based on who signed up just sort of like gave me peace of mind.
Did you get feedback like on the story as you were posting it on Patreon?
A little bit. Yeah. Like, I mean, not like critiquing feedback, you know, gotcha. Like it was just sort of like, I read it. Great. You know,
for sure. Yeah. I didn't know if like, you know, with you working kind of in that like way where it's like, oh, here's a page, here's a page, here's a page. I didn't know if like maybe a comment was like, oh, hey, let me actually try to rework this. Because, you know, at the end of the day, in my opinion, if you have somebody that's willing to sign up for your Patreon, that's like your number one fan base right there. Like, like they're willing to give you money and, you know, see you as you're, you know, getting that train along the track and everything. So but also like, you know, you get a lot of like, you know, well, online comics in general, like I feel like comment sections can just get so crazy. But I guess on Patreon, it's kind of filtered out because, you know, it's more of a direct relationship between the artist and then I don't want to say the consumer, but I don't know what other word to use for the patron, I guess, is what they would call it. Yeah. All righty. Well, it comes that part of the show where we get a couple listener based questions in here. So on Instagram, Instagram user Hitchcock Blonde Queen asked, pancakes or waffles?
I'm going to have to say both. I think that there is a context for either, so I can't choose.
For sure. I feel this is just me personally. I feel like a waffle is more of like a butter and syrup thing, and pancakes, you can get really crazy with them. You can make like, you look at an IHOP menu, it's like cheesecake, tres leches, like all these different pancakes. So I can't pick one either. Alrighty. Well, second question came from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Glick23. Natalie, what was the best and or most surprising thing that happened by putting your story in the world?
I mean, I think the best thing so far has been hearing from individual readers and like people finding the book and then reaching out and saying that it meant something to them. So yeah, that's definitely been really rewarding. I think like surprising, sort of like what I was saying earlier, it's like so much of this has been surprising that I feel like in a year I'll be able to look back and like have more of a sense of what has even been going on. But yeah, I think every day it's a surprise.
For sure. I mean, the book is just out. It's not even a month yet, right?
Right.
I mean, it's pretty new. Yeah. So you're processing it in real time. Now, I do kind of to build up off this question with the personal subject matter at hand, and you're releasing this into the public. And I don't, you know, want to pry too much, but obviously your family and friends are possibly going to read this. Do you kind of give them a primer? Hey, this is what this is about. Just so you know, like, so it's not as shocking. Do you, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, did you tell them beforehand? Like, is there any kind of weird, like, you know, when you're doing such a personal story, like, is there kind of any warning or, you know, those people close to you, like, hey, I'm doing this. Or do you just kind of release it? And if they read it, you'll talk about it if they ask.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the book description hopefully gives them like a pretty clear sense that it's like this deals with adolescent sexual assault. Mm-hmm. But I think that it definitely has been maybe like the biggest, I don't know, struggle with this story is that it's like the way that I tell the story is like very vulnerable. And it's like when you're working on your art, you're doing it alone. And so it just sort of like comes out the way that you think about these things. But then of course, like, you know, I don't go around talking about trauma with people. I don't really talk about, you know, I'm not sharing details of my sex life with like my uncle or something, you know? So it's like, I think that there's inevitably this sort of strange like boundary that starts to disappear when you release a memoir. And like, yeah, different family members, like, I don't think my dad will ever read it, and that's, you know, for the best. But yeah, it's like each family member, I think, has a different sort of comfort level with engaging. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely some people who maybe bought the book to support me and weren't didn't know exactly what they were getting into. But I hope that it'll all work out in the end.
For sure. Well, the book's great. I'm looking forward to book two, whenever that is, but don't kill yourself making it. Cartoonists have to take care of themselves. But before we get out of here today, you know, you can get the book. It is from Fantagraphics, so it's available in every bookstore. If you have to special order it, you can, if it's not already on the shelves. But do you have a website or anywhere that people can check you out online, support you directly on your Patreon, et cetera?
Yeah, I need to build a website. That's on my to-do list. So
mine
for
too,
now,
for like 6 years.
Right, same. Yeah. I like have a domain name that I'm paying for, and it's it's just floating there. But anyways, so Instagram, which is Natalie_Norris, and then I have like a link tree that will link you to the Patreon, which is patreon.com/dearminnie, and then I think that's mostly it. I honestly, like, I try not to do too much with social media. So Instagram is really it for now.
Okay. Hell yeah. Do you have like a web store with any old work or anything in it where people can buy stuff?
No. Another thing I should do, but I just, haven't.
For sure. Well, show schedule, are you doing any for the rest of the year where people can come get the book, get it signed, anything like that?
Yeah, I'll be at SPX, just at the Fantagraphics table. And then I have my own table at MICE. I'll be also at the Nonfiction Comics Fest, which is a new festival in Vermont. And I think that's it for now.
Right on. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for coming by. Everybody go get Dear Minnie, book one. And as always, listeners, stay gutter.